The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. Today is World TB Day. Tuberculosis is a worldwide epidemic that each year kills 1.5 million people. Healthcare workers are on the front lines of this epidemic. According to the research, TB Unmasked by ARIES, up to 80% of TB cases among healthcare workers can be connected to their work. Get this. Healthcare workers are 2 times more at risk of being affected with TB in the United States and 5 times in South Africa, 5 to 11 times in India. Very, very critical topic we will discuss today. And in the studio, I am joined by Dr. Louis Schrager. He is Vice President for Scientific Affairs with ARIES, a global nonprofit biotech based outside Washington, D.C. Dr. Schrager, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Also joining us via phone from Durban, South Africa, is Dr. Yuvistra Naido. Dr. Naido is a practicing physician in Durban, and he's a survivor of multi-drug-resistant TB. Dr. Naido, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and we look forward to hearing your experience. Now, let me remind our listeners, if you would like to participate in the program with your question or comment, you can call 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us, as you do, at healthchat@voanews.com or post your questions on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. So we will start discussing tuberculosis in a moment, but first, Voice of America's reporter Martha VanderWolf reports on efforts to detect drug-resistant TB in Ethiopia.
Ethiopia is a high-risk country for tuberculosis, ranking third in Africa with over 260 cases per 100,000 people. Wupsha Chota is 28 years old and had TB for 4 years, as doctors did not immediately realize he was suffering from the multi-drug-resistant form of the disease.
I was depressed, like, even when breathing is difficult, you will be depressed, definitely. Like, I usually tend to stay home. I don't go out that much.
Wupsha was studying to become a medical doctor when diagnosed with tuberculosis in 2009. At the time, blood samples were not tested with the Gene Expert machine, the latest technology in the fight against TB. This machine has increased the detection of multi-drug-resistant TB by almost 50%. There are now 81 of these $35,000 machines in TB labs across Ethiopia. The machine analyzes blood samples in less than 2 hours. Each test is expensive, although the price came down from $17 to $9 per test with the help of organizations such as UNITAID. Wupshat believes that if today's technology had been available when he was diagnosed, he would have recovered more quickly.
Definitely my sputum samples will be sent for gene expert assay. So that way it will be detected and I would have been treated 2 years prior to the time I got treated.
Ethiopia has already reached the UN Millennium Development Goal of halting and reducing TB cases by half. The post-2015 goal seeks to reduce TB deaths by 95% by 2035. Nurse Feliku Tsegaye works at Alert, a medical facility where TB patients receive secluded treatment for 2 to 4 months of the 20-month treatment. As TB is easy to transmit to another person by air, Nurse Feliku wears a mouth cap at all times when interacting with the patients. Feliku warns that a higher detection rate will put pressure on their work. She says that now they don't have problems. There's adequate space and medicine to treat patients. But she says that with the new machines, health workers and health facilities need to be skilled up to provide for all patients. The World Health Organization says more funding is required to accommodate all future TB patients. Most resources aimed at preventing and halting TB come from the Global Fund and other international partners. TB treatment is now free for patients such as Saba Haile Mariam, a 23-year-old woman who is treated at Alert by Nurse Feliku. She said she would not be able to afford the treatment if it was not free. She says she lost a lot of things, including her job. She says she has to take 12 tablets a day for 2 years and an injection every Saturday. Ethiopia now has a TB recovery rate of 70%. It is not clear whether the rate can stay so high as the new and better machines detect more TB patients. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
And let me start with you, Dr. Schreger. We heard this report, and again, as I mentioned earlier, healthcare workers are really at the forefront, and they are really vulnerable. The numbers are really scary, I have to admit. So it's a serious problem. Let me have your reaction to this.
Well, it's a terribly serious problem. Healthcare workers are on the front lines. They're dedicated to their patients, and yet in the back of their minds, they know that they're putting themselves at risk. That's why developing a vaccine to prevent TB disease and optimally prevent TB infection as well is a very important thing we need to try to do.
Now, Dr. Naido, you are a survivor of a multi-drug resistant TB, and your story was featured in the TB Unmasked series that was produced by ERIS. Let's take a listen to an excerpt of your story, and we'll come back to you and get your reaction.
Sure.
The advice that I was getting from people who claim to be TB experts.
Yeah.
Suggested that we do a lobectomy straight away. The lobe that's infected, cut it out. And we said no. We're going to try and salvage it.
I just thought, it was another thing to do. We'll just take my 6 months of treatment and I'll be fine. I took 23 tablets a day with IV medication in my heart. The side effects were getting worse. I got depression, nausea and vomiting and feeling like you're about to faint almost every day. My skin started going into these big blisters, bursting with pus. I also had severe joint stiffness. Your joints lock up. Just to pee, it took me about 30 minutes to reach the bathroom.
We spent nights sitting in that lounge there, mulling over all the possibilities, basically wondering whether he was really going to get better.
And we thank ERIS for allowing us to use this short clip. Now, Dr. Naido, you were in this short clip that we heard with your father, who was sharing his concerns as to your state of health. You talked about what you went through, more than 3 years of treatment, 23 tablets a day. I can't even fathom what it feels like. Tell us what it was. What was that experience like?
Well, I have to say it was a very humbling human experience. I'm very happy to say that I look at the majority of healthcare workers that get afflicted with TB, just sensitive TB. A lot of them actually start developing a right bitterness in them over time. And I'm very glad with me it was on the opposite. I had a very knowledgeable family, but, you know, the one thing I actually learned at the end of the day was that TB isn't a disease of individuals, but more of units, of families, of communities. And one voice being lost, it's remembered. And yet we have not been focusing our efforts that unified at the end of the day. I had 23 tablets a day. I had IV injections into my heart, and much the same as chemo patients. And I had almost every complication known to the TB medication. And it's funny that what I see in clinical practice throughout the world, as well as with my research colleagues, healthcare workers seem to have the worst side effects to the TB medication available. I just think something's got to give. And I look at the work that companies such as ERIS are doing, and it just instilled a bit of hope. But while I went through those 3 years, each day was a question mark whether it was going to arrive. I had life-threatening complications. It wasn't just mild ones. And I think it was just having great support around me and just having my academic knowledge as a healthcare provider that actually got me through. But I have to say, I wouldn't be the physician I am today if TB wasn't there. But I The last thing I also want to add is that we always talk about patients surviving TB. And I think the message that we should be actually bringing across is that patients should be living with TB infection and disease, and thereafter living strongly thereafter. I don't think it should be just merely we survived the bug.
Okay, so I guess that's it's something to keep in mind. Patients are living with TB and not just surviving. So then, Dr. Schrager, when you hear this story, and you working with ARIES is really one of your mission, if not your main mission, is to develop a vaccine to really address this issue and prevent the disease from spreading to more people, whether it's healthcare workers or other people in different communities. What do you make of the way where we are today? There is a TB vaccine, BCG. But apparently there is a need for more, because otherwise people like Dr. Naido wouldn't be talking and sharing their story. So tell us what you make of the state of preventing TB today.
Yeah, sure. So I just want to first address the issue of BCG, just so everyone is clear on what it does do and what it doesn't do.
Absolutely.
So BCG is a vaccine that is quite effective in preventing severe life-threatening tuberculosis disease in infants and young children, such as tuberculosis meningitis, or having tuberculosis spread throughout the body and kill, you know, little babies and children. Mm-hmm. It also prevents, to a certain extent, some pulmonary infection in children up to about the age of 9. After 9 years old, we really don't see a whole lot of protection anymore. The protection wanes from BCG, which is why we have a global problem with TB infection and disease, despite the fact that BCG is the most widely used vaccine on the face of the earth. Mm. So where are we now? Well, we've made incredible progress in the past 10 years. So if you look 10 years ago, there was only one TB vaccine candidate in clinical trials. Right now, we have 13 candidates in clinical trials. And even before clinical trials, we have a lot more candidates that are being developed, and hopefully many of them will eventually end up in clinical trials. So there's a lot of active work going on.
Mm-hmm. And 13 vaccine candidates. Where do we stand in terms of reaching a point where we have something out? Is your work promising in a few years, maybe?
Oh, it's very difficult to tell. That's why we have to do these studies. You
okay.
know, tuberculosis has evolved with humanity over the past 70,000 years. It's a very cagey organism. It knows how to adapt itself mm-hmm. to our immune responses. So we have to be smarter than the germ. And that takes a lot of thinking. That takes a lot of research. I'd love to guarantee you that in 10 years we'll have a vaccine that will work. Maybe it'll be before, maybe it'll be after, but we have to keep trying.
So we are still unclear. We have a question from Anastasia in Ghana. Dr. Naido, she says, after your experience with TB, what practical advice would you give to people who are living with TB, and what should people around them do to help or to prevent themselves?
I think the biggest thing we've created as human beings historically is creating a stigma around TB sufferers. And I think it is a disease that is doable to prevent, it is doable to cure. I think patients, on the patient side, those that are afflicted with disease, adherence to your medication is first and foremost. Making sure you have good nutrition, making sure you have good social support around you, and I think anybody afflicted at that end, whether you're a healthcare worker or an average person on the street that's lay, you need to take these type of precautions, because it is a bug that is spread via aerosol droplets. I just think those are the general things that you need to take. But I think the more support we lend to patients afflicted with the disease, the more unified our fight will be against this at the end of the day. So I think that's where it takes a lot of, from a community level to a political level, to a nationwide, international level from funders, philanthropists. I think it's a unified approach that will actually make us achieve a lot more than we already are today.
Okay. Now, when we talk about healthcare workers specifically, you made a clarification about the BCG, because one of the questions that I had was the fact that, you know, if healthcare workers shouldn't be vaccinated, if it should be mandatory, Dr. Schreger, but if the BCG is effective with children and infants, then clearly there's no way of protecting healthcare workers.
Well, there's right now no way of protecting them through a vaccine. That's what we're trying to develop.
Okay.
But there are ways that healthcare workers can protect themselves, and Dr. Nadeau can probably address this more clearly than even I, although when I was younger and I was, before I joined ARIS, I was taking care of tuberculosis patients as well in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
With using masks, suspecting patients that would come into your emergency room or come into your clinic with a cough and a fever, suspecting that they might have tuberculosis, and protecting yourselves either by putting a mask on yourself or having the patients masked until you can get a better sense of what the potential is that they might have tuberculosis. I mean, these are ways that healthcare workers can protect themselves, but none of this is perfect. There are real challenges, and no matter what we do, healthcare workers will be potentially at risk for infection until we get an effective vaccine.
Okay, and Dr. Nadeau, let me have your reaction to this, because given that you've been through this experience, what did you do then that you will do differently now, or is the risk still the same given that there is no vaccine? And as Dr. Schreger mentioned, perhaps you could elaborate a little more in terms of what healthcare workers are doing practically to protect themselves.
Absolutely. I agree with Dr. Schreger. I mean, we have masks available to us. I think it's a general consensus as well that patients infected with diseases and with TB, when they come into clinics or hospitals, within the first 3 weeks of their treatment, we advise them to wear a surgical mask over them to prevent spread. But I think we need to take cognizance of the fact that the TB bacillus is even smaller than the influenza virus. And if you and me on the street can get a cold or a flu that easily, how difficult do you think it is to catch TB at the end of the day? So I think not much has changed, and I think something like a vaccine would be the ultimate answer. We're away from it. So ultimately, we have to take best precautions at the moment and protect those that are most vulnerable.
Okay. Now, I have this question from Paul in Kenya. He says, what are the ways of catching tuberculosis? And perhaps I can direct this to you, Dr. Schreger. Can you kind of go over the different ways? Dr. Nadeau mentioned about how easily it can be to catch it, how easy it can be.
It's actually an easy answer. There's really only one important way of catching tuberculosis, and that is you inhale it.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a room, you're in a closed area where someone else is coughing that has tuberculosis. As Dr. Nadeau said, the tuberculosis organisms, the Mycobacterium bacilli, TB bacilli, are in droplets that float in the air in that closed space, and you breathe them in. Normally, people aren't exposed to very large amounts of TB germs.
Mm-hmm.
All it needs is just a few repeated exposures. That's the most classic way that people become exposed. It's just repeated exposures to small amounts, say in closed spaces like minivans. You know, when you have a lot of people packed into those minivans that are very common in Africa,
mm-hmm.
or even in classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Miners in South Africa that are in the same barracks or other countries as well, or going down in those elevators that are very crowded and it's a very long ride in those elevators. These are classic areas where TB is spread.
Okay. Dr. Nadeau, there are different types of TB, regular TB as we know it. And then we hear about XDR TB, we hear about MDR TB, the one you went through. Can you walk us through the different types? How do we go from TB to XDR-TB, for example?
Sure. Well, these are just showing resistance to the various drugs that are available to us. At present, we have different classes of drugs. So basically, the first class of drugs that we use are the four drugs that we use for drug-sensitive TB, and those namely are rifampicin, isoniazid, ethambutol, and pyrazinamide. And those have been used historically since the mid-1930s, 40s or so. We've augmented a four-drug regimen throughout the 20th, towards the latter part of the 20th century. The advent of MDR or multi-drug-resistant TB is a resistance to two of those drugs in those four-drug panels of rifampicin and INH. XDR, or extensively drug-resistant TB, has come across since about 2006 in the world, and it shows multi-drug-resistant TB means a resistance to rifampicin and isoniazid, as well as other MDR-TB drugs that we have developed called fluoroquinolones, mm-hmm. as well as the injections that some TB patients get. So XDR-TB is a resistance of rifampicin, isoniazid, as well as resistance to fluoroquinolone type of drugs, as well as the injections that we give patients. So XDR meaning that it is the most resistant type of drug we have, a bug that we have at the moment in the world.
So what, during the course of the treatment, are you contagious until you are completely cured, or is there a certain stage where you are no longer contagious and you can be in close contact with people?
It all depends on where the bug has actually situated to cause the most disease.
Okay.
If it's in your lungs, as Dr. Schreger said, the drug is transmitted by aerosols, meaning you cough up droplets from your lungs, and it is inhaled by somebody else. So if the disease is present in your lung, the chances of infectivity are greater. But at the moment, there's a lot of dispute of the different populations of bugs that grow in your body as well. And we are not sure whether the drugs that we have at present actively penetrate different types of tissues at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that is our deliberation as clinicians and scientists. So hence, our strategy to kill off TB is that we give an intensive phase of treatment where we try to kill off all the fast and rapidly growing TB in the body. And then we give a slow, continuous phase where we slowly kill off the slow-growing bugs. But at the moment, we actually don't know which patients will actually fall through the cracks of 2 years of treatment versus 6 months of treatment versus 18 months or 9 months of treatment. So we actually basically, as clinicians, suck it out of our thumb, and we look at a clinical response of the patient more than anything these days, especially in pediatrics where I work with children.
Mm-hmm. This sounds a bit like bargaining, really.
Absolutely. We're on a ticking time bomb.
Mm. Dr. Schreger, now Aries produced a series of five short films, which Dr. Naidoo was featured in one of them. And the last film featured the head of the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Tom Frieden, who tested positive for latent TB earlier in his career and had been treated as a precaution since then. But when this work was ongoing in terms of interviewing people to share their stories and some of the research that were conducted, what was surprising or perhaps enlightening in putting these stories together?
Oh, I think the most enlightening aspect of this is learning the stories that we learned, say, from Dr. Naidoo and from the other healthcare workers who we interviewed and became infected. I mean, there was one, in one of the segments, there's a very sad story of a nurse who died of drug-resistant tuberculosis. And interviewing the parents and the grief, this was an Indian nurse, okay. The grief that came out, was really very moving, very sad. There's a physician from India who started this very aggressive and creative way of, I believe her name is Shelley Batra, but I have to check that. Who created this very creative way of delivering treatment, okay. to patients, because it was very difficult for patients to actually receive all the different drugs that Dr. Naidoo talked about taking.
Yes.
Very moving experiences in these films.
Indeed, it sounds like it. Now, tell us about the work of Aris. We went over it a little bit earlier, but at this point, where are we? Where do we stand? And what is the way forward?
So we are making good, solid progress. The organism again is a difficult one, but we're making progress. We've got 13 candidates out there. Aris supports a good number of them. We're working very closely with our global partners in Europe, in South Africa. This is a global epidemic. It's going to need a global solution with global cooperation, and so we're very much part of that network, and we're going to increase our research before we get these candidates into the clinic. We're going to try to get more candidates into early phase studies faster. And we're going to try to learn both from our successes and our failures to make sure that moving forward we can do this in as efficient and rapid a way possible.
Okay. Now, Dr. Naido, as a pediatrician, I wanted to give us an idea as to the TB, how it is being. First of all, is it something that is common among children, or given that the BCG is administered to children, are they not really at risk? Can you tell us about that?
That's a very, very good question. The best answer to that is I don't know.
Okay.
We don't know if we are underdiagnosing or overdiagnosing with children. Children typically have a very little amount of bug in their system. If we had to look at the lungs, where the majority of infection occurs. So we do not have an adequate diagnostic test at the moment to tell us whether the child has TB. So we rely on other factors, such as whether they've been immunized with BCG, number one. Number two, are they growing well? Number three, do they respond to a TB skin test? As well as if there's anybody in their household or in their neighbors that have TB themselves, that could be a contact to causing infection. The World Health Organization in the early 50s or so stated publicly that the childhood agenda for tuberculosis was not a serious priority for them because children have very few bug in them. The actual bacillary load is very low. Whereas now we actually realize that children are a great marker for us to assess what the control is of TB in the community. Obviously, if there are more adults with TB, they will be infecting more children, and that's what we will see. But without an adequate series of diagnostic technology tests, we're actually really battling. So there is a caution to say whether in endemic areas, whether we are just over-treating anything that looks and smells like TB, or is the epidemic so bad that we are actually under-treating it because we don't have adequate tools at present.
Okay, Dr. Naido, and we have to leave it there. We thank you so much for sharing your story and joining us from Durban.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. Schreger, it's a pleasure to have you here in our studios. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And I thank all of you for listening today on this edition of Health Chat. Our guests were Dr. Lewis Schreger, Vice President for Scientific Affairs with Aris, the global nonprofit biotech company based outside Washington, D.C. Also joining us via phone from South Africa was Dr. Yuvistra Naido, a practicing physician in Durban, and a survivor of multi-drug-resistant TB. I'm your host, Lenor Moudou, here in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.